are now joining Children of the Watch.
That's right. It's the number one podcast in the galaxy for all things Star Wars television. I'm your host, Alex Maxwell, and joining us again is...
And not as always, because I wasn't here for the breakdown episode, but Mac Lacey. Glad to be back. Sorry I missed it, but life just happens and everything. But, you know, I'll be back on next week. So,
yeah.
Hope you guys didn't have too much fun without me. But
well, we did have a lot of fun. Our guest, Jonah Marie, just so great.
She's awesome.
We did have a lot of fun breaking down Chapter 2. But, you know, I think a lot of people are waiting on your take for Chapter 2. Like, what do you think of Chapter 2? Because I know a lot of people were kind of messaging us on Twitter, Instagram stuff. They want to know what you think, Max. So,
So I had just so much fun watching Chapter 2. A lot of my fears of the show not living up to everything in my mind, I think, have been put to rest, because this episode gave me so many unexpected things that I just did not see coming, but was here for the whole thing. I loved the Tusken stuff and the parallels between the struggles of indigenous people in America and the West, and I love the Tusken Queen is the coolest Star Wars character ever. I'm just calling
really
her
cool.
Tusken Queen.
Yeah, that's what we called her.
Yeah, she's incredible. Just like, she just seemed to be taking so much almost like playful delight in like hurling these people off the train and everything. Like, yeah. She's just super cool. But I loved the lizard spice trip.
It's like only in Star Wars could you get something like that.
Yeah, or Dune. I mean, that's like, I loved that too, because it's the reason Star Wars has spice and Tatooine in the first place. Tatooine's just Arrakis, basically. George Lucas read Dune and was like, I could do that.
Yeah, basically he's like reading Dune, he's like, this will never take off. I'll do it better.
Yeah.
Here's Tatooine.
And, I mean...
And now we have them both now, so that's great.
It's great. It's great. So I also really enjoyed like seeing BK show up, and the new Hutt twins characters
that
are incredible.
Cool.
So I still think that they could use a bit more gas for the underworld plotline. It's still seemingly it's slogging a little bit for me. I see some conflicts building up here and there, but we've gotten two episodes of Boba Fett just kind of like learning the ropes and everything.
Right.
I feel like nothing super big has transpired yet on that storyline. So I am waiting for that to pick up yet a little bit more, you know? But I'm just, this episode 2 or chapter 2 definitely helped my buy-in for this show a ton. I'm invested now.
I wish, and we kind of talked about this on the breakdown with Jonah Marie, but I kind of wish that they had found a way to combine episode 1 and 2 as the premiere.
Yes.
Because
I think they could have actually trimmed some fat from both chapters just a little bit, maybe cut some of the action sequences and stuff a little bit. And I know that's my own preferences and everything coming through, just because I different people might have different opinions on that. But and then combine them into one big narrative.
Right.
That way you get this.
The
mythical aspect of it, I think, comes through better when you look at both chapters kind of in continuation.
I agree. Yeah, so overall, I mean, I'm really glad that you enjoyed it just as much as we did, and I hope that this show just continues to improve, but I think you're right that the underworld and present timeline, it needs to pick up a little bit. In the sense of, we still need to know, okay, what is Boba's motivation? Now, we did talk about on the breakdown, I think we're starting to learn what maybe his motivation is through the flashbacks, and it's potentially connected to maybe grafting the Tuskens back into Tatooine society, or doing something to kind of bring them into the fold, or he might even get the help of the Tuskens to really solidify his control over Tatooine. We'll see what happens there, but I feel like the Tuskens will be involved in the present day timeline regardless of what kind of happens.
Yeah. And I could see it going either way. I could still see it being mostly like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like analogous conflicts and stuff showing up again, like lessons learned in the Tusken stuff. He'll be able to use those lessons and the things he learned in the future, you know, or I could see it being a very literal continuation of the story at this point now too.
Right.
Where, you know, like you said, he's trying to do like a specific, you know, he's trying to get their territory back or something like that. You know, who knows?
Yeah. And the thing is, like, I don't know how much more story they can tell in the flashback with the Tuskens. If he really did stay with them from the moment he got out of the Sarlacc until we saw him in the first chapter of season two of The Mandalorian, because this past episode kind of made it seem like he did stay with them that entire time.
Yeah.
So I would assume, and again, this is kind of retreading a little bit our breakdown, but I would assume either something bad happens to the Tuskens or like something kind of sparks his like, okay, I've got to do something to like protect them from future incidences, and I've got to take over Tatooine. I think that's what's going on, but we want to hear what you guys think is going on, and that's why we're here. This is our voicemail hotline episode. This is one of the cool things that I think we get to do as a podcast is you guys call in and you tell us your thoughts and your theories on the show. And so that's what we're doing here today. We've already done our scene-by-scene breakdown, and if you haven't listened to that yet, make sure you go back and check that out. It was a lot of fun. Especially this last chapter, because there were so many Easter eggs in that one. But I'm excited for this one as well. And just get some business out of the way. You can follow us on Twitter at COTWatch and Instagram at COTWatch if you want to engage with us over there. We have a lot of fun over there. And then also our Patreon, patreon.com/TheMandalorianWatch. We're kind of keeping that name as an homage of where we came from, because we were formerly The Mandalorian Watch, but changed our name to Children of the Watch to better cover the upcoming live-action television shows. And so just for $2 a month, you get access to all the bonus content that you will be hearing if you're a Patreon member. So you get your bonus voicemail hotlines that are just like this, but there's just more. And then you also have some fun commentaries that we've done on season one and two of The Mandalorian and extra stuff as well. So it's just a lot of fun over there. And then if you could, this would be a huge help. If you can't support us on the Patreon, you can give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. That goes a long way. And subscribe on YouTube. I think that does everything. So I want to give a shout out to our Mandalore Patreons or patron members real quick. And these are the people who are going above and beyond on our Patreon. And this is Sean M., Brian S., Myron C., Dave, Tyler B., Amy C., at Kessel Run on Twitter, Annie, Andrew Verson, Jansen B., James Parker Price, Todd, Sam Smallwood, Adam S., Larry S., Matt from Michigan, Rick Villanueva, who is controlled by Mieber Gascon in a bodysuit, Jesse, James B., Sean D., Yosefar, Jord H., and Haley Hobbs. Thank you so much for being our Mandalore patrons. You guys are awesome.
Thank y'all so much. Y'all are the true MVPs.
They really are. So I think we should jump into our first voicemail. What do you think?
Let's hear it.
Hi, y'all. It's Rachel. I was actually y'all's first giveaway winner. So fellow fans, if you're not following them on Twitter, go do so. You might be able to win something awesome. Here is my prediction. I predict that we were kind of introduced to the theme this episode of Boba introducing new technologies to the tribe. So my prediction is that that's going to kind of lead to his downfall. So he's going to keep introducing the tribe to new ways, new technologies, and that's going to lead to some accidental death. I predict it's probably going to be that child that we assume is the chieftain's child. This is going to lead to Boba being exiled or shunned from the tribe. I don't see him leaving this new family of his on his own unless something like this happens where he's exiled. That's going to set him on his new journey to find his armor and where we like, kind of currently are. However, I think in the future of the series, he's going to need the tribe's help in some way. So he's going to have to go back to them, make amends, and ask for their help in his new empire. I just think the tribe is too cool. Their culture is too cool. Their whole warrior status is too cool to just kill them off. So I think Boba is going to have to be shunned or exiled in some way. I love y'all's show. Keep the watch. Thanks.
Whoa! Rachel, first of all, thank you for giving everyone proof that we do give away our giveaway prizes. People do win those. But wow, what a theory. We're just coming right out the bat with it.
Wow.
Man, that took me to the depths of despair.
It made sense. Like, when she went further into the voicemail, it made sense why she was thinking that way. Because first I was like, this is really dark. But then, like, yeah, they are really skilled warriors, and they seem to be able to hold their own. And I do like the idea that was kind of introduced in Chapter 2. The leader did say, like, the Offworlders, they have technology, and we don't. And right. Boba's like, no, you do. And so that might be something. I mean, she could be right about that. That might be something that could end up being the downfall of this Tusken tribe.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, I could definitely see it playing out in a manner like that. Yeah, maybe like he gets some thermal detonators for a specific mission or whatever, and then stuff goes wrong. I don't know. That'd be heartbreaking, and I hope that doesn't happen. Especially, I don't want to lose a little Tusken kid. But I mean, that would be an inciting incident to get him kind of like away from the tribe.
Yeah, I could see that happening. I'm still leaning towards something bad happens to the Tusken tribe, and it might be kind of a tweak on what she said, though. I think it could be because of technology, but it's not necessarily Boba's fault in the sense of, like, he just couldn't stop them, and that's why he realizes, I've got to go take control of Tatooine, and to do that, I'm going to need my armor back, and that's what kind of gets him back in the game.
Yeah. I mean, just me personally, I would rather see Boba be motivated out of, like, you know, just, like, his love for this, like, kind of newfound family, and then something, a dilemma he's going to help them out with, you know? I would prefer that to be his motivations, just because I think that's an interesting take on Boba that we haven't really seen yet. But, I mean, anything can happen at this point. The show really hasn't given us any indication of what's coming next, which is really cool.
Right.
I love that, like, this episode managed to hook us, and then also we still don't know what, like, anything could happen next, right?
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. That's really interesting, and it's a scary thought, especially, I just really love that Tusken kid. I hope he's okay. By the way, I've kind of come to the realization that my theory from the Chapter 1 breakdown is just not true. It's not going to happen. the Tusken kid is not going to be the biker chick that we will see eventually. I'm hoping we see her next chapter. I don't know. Maybe the biker chick is part of that swoop gang that's from Chapter 2 that he beats up at Tashi Station.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Never know. Never know. Yeah. I do think that this chapter, speaking of Tusken kid, I think they are like a different species and require the face stuff biologically or physiologically. Because I think Boba would have gotten the wraps if they were like a traditional or ceremonial thing at the end.
Yeah. And then I guess to kind of play off of that too, like when he is being robed, like in the Tusken robes and stuff, that scene kind of parallels what we saw in Chapter 1 when Boba is being robed by the droids.
Right.
And it seems like maybe that black underrobe is like actually just like a version of his robes that he wears as a Tusken tribe member. What I'm saying? So it's like he's kind of wearing the Tusken robes and then puts the Mandalorian over it. So we talked about this a little bit. I'm not sure whether it was on this voicemail hotline or the Patreon voicemail hotline, but the whole thing was Star Wars and their clothing, right?
Yeah.
That could be representative of, like, he's still Tusken at heart, and then he puts the Mandalorian armor over that. Like, he has become a new person, like we saw at the end of Chapter 2. He has been accepted into this tribe, and he's part of the Tusken tribe now. Whether he's a Tusken or not, he's part of this tribe. And so, like, he hasn't lost that part of himself by putting the Mandalorian armor over the robes that he wears as a Tusken tribe member.
Yeah, I really like that. I like that, you know, the Mandalorian armor is such a personal you know, significant piece of, like, you know, clothing or whatever. And then the melding of those two things as kind of these two different facets of his personality and of his lineage now, you know?
Yeah.
It's a cool thought. I like it.
Yeah, it is cool. Thank you, Rachel, for your voicemail. Let's do the next one.
Thanks, Rachel.
Alex and Mac, oh my gosh. Episode 2 of Book of Boba Fett. I can't believe it. This is Clay again from Georgia. Wanted to call in, and I can't believe what we just watched. I just rewatched it for the second time, and I'm curious to hear what predictions and themes you guys have caught for this episode. Wanted to throw this out there and see what you thought of the theme behind his dream whenever he is kind of going in this transformational state of being accepted by the Tuskens. I'm curious if, and hear me out, with this, it's essentially his second chance at life because, you know, the flashback of his dad, Jango, and leaving in Kamino, and then also him fighting in the Sarlacc pit, that shows kind of where his first half of his life left off. And so now we're on part two. So, yeah, would love to hear what your thoughts are on that. And then also for some predictions, do you think he is going to be fighting the mayor or even the Hutts? Or is he going to have to partner up with the mayor and maybe join their side to fight off the Hutts? So, yeah, man, this is, can't wait. Can't wait to hear what you got to say, but this is probably one of my favorite episodes by far, of anything, even including The Mandalorian. So, one last thing I will mention, actually, since I've got a little more time, the detail with the train scene and the music in the train scene, and also whenever they're in the fire, pit, whenever he's getting his gaffy stick and doing the dance, the music is so on point. So I'm excited to hear the soundtrack once it releases. Yeah. So again, thanks for, you know, letting us break this down and everything. Appreciate you opening up the voicemail. And man, it's amazing to watch Star Wars right now. I can't believe it. All right. You guys have a good day, and cannot wait for episode 3. All right, bye.
What a time to be alive, Clay. We're enjoying and basking in the greatness that is Star Wars television. And just to think, this is like just the beginning, right?
Yeah.
Like this is like this is the Book of Boba Fett, and then in a few months, more than likely, it's going to be Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, even in this show, this is only the second episode. We're what,
right,
a quarter of the way through or whatever?
Right.
Not even. So, I mean, it's definitely, this feels a lot like 2015 in the lead up to Force Awakens. Just like feeling like we're back in a big way far as getting just fantastic, mind-blowing Star Wars content delivered to our eyes.
So yeah, let's talk about Clay's voicemail real quick. The music is incredible. I agree.
Yes.
The train sequence was great. By the way, the director of photography was the same guy who did all the Back to the Future movies.
Mm.
And so the train sequence, obviously, it kind of reminds you a little bit of the train sequence in Back to the Future 3. And then one of the bikers in Tashi Station, if you look at his jacket, not only does it say Tatooine on the back, but at the bottom it says Emmett in Ourobesh, which is really cool. So like Emmett Brown.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. But then, yeah, so let's talk about what do we think Boba's going to do now that we're getting like all the different chess pieces on the board. We've got the mayor, we've got the Hutts now involved. And in the flashbacks, the Pike Syndicate is pretty much on the board too. We don't know where their standing is in terms of the present day timeline, but they're a player on the board. So we're starting to see all these different players. What do you think is going to happen out of that?
Yeah, I mean, Clay was talking about, like, this theme of kind of rebirth, a second chance, coming out of the Sarlacc pit. That's one thing, and it's not a criticism, it's just this is the missing piece for me right now, is, like, what does Boba Fett being new really mean for the character? Like, I guess, to a certain degree... Like I'm really enjoying this show, but Boba Fett has kind of been a generic protagonist. There's and I'm saying this with tons of time left in the show to develop him as a protagonist. But he just, like, there's not a lot about what's happening to him and what he does that is only something that Boba Fett would be doing or saying. Or does that make sense?
Yeah, sure.
So I think, like, that's kind of the missing piece in finding out what this kind of second chance means for him, what he's planning on doing with it. Obviously he and the mayor are going to be clashing heads on the, I think he and the mayor will clash heads on the underworld side of things before he and the Hutts do. I think the Hutts might be back later in the season, whereas the mayor might be the next couple episodes, you know? But other than that, I honestly, like, all these pieces are getting arranged on the board, and I don't know what's going to be the...
Okay, here's what I think is happening. I think the mayor is kind of on the side of the Hutts, and so is Garza Fwip. I think she's also on the side of the Hutts. In the sense of, like, that's what has always been known in Tatooine, so you're going to stick with what you know. Right. So it's like, I think they're like underbosses to the Hutts. And so the twins have now been on the board. I think the Pike Syndicate are not beholden to the Hutts necessarily.
Mm.
But there is something, I guess, that we should talk about is, like, that line that Fennec says is, like, we're going to need to get permission to take them out if we want to. What does that mean? Permission from who?
It seemed like, to me, like the Hutt Council, or like...
That's the way I took it at first, too.
Yeah, it's like, hey, if, like, you're gonna, like, nobody kills one of us except for us kind of things, or those with our permission, you know? Because, like, obviously, I'm sure there's all kinds of conniving and scheming and stuff that's happening within the Hutt Council. But, like... As far as outside of that, they're all going to stick together unless there's an extreme circumstance, you know? So I bet you Boba and Fennec are going to have to go to the Hutt Council at some point in the series.
Is it possible? Now stick with me on this.
All right.
Is it possible as we go throughout the series, more and more pieces are starting to be added to the board? So, like, we got the Pikes, we got the Hutts. What if in the next episode we get Black Sun, okay? And then we're starting to see the old members of the Shadow Collective, which we've talked about in the lead up to this show. And if you're not familiar, in the Clone Wars, there was this group called the Shadow Collective. Darth Maul was revived. He did not actually die. He came back. And his plan was to basically take over using the criminal underworld element. And he built an alliance of gangsters, basically. So it was him and Death Watch, which Death Watch was the Mandalorian terrorist group. We might think that the Children of the Watch were formed out of them, or Children of the Watch were first. We don't know.
Yeah, they seem connected. In some
the
way.
Watch, yeah. So is Darth Maul, Death Watch, Black Sun, and then the Pike Syndicate, the Hutt Councils.
Yep.
Okay. And then the Crimson Dawn.
Yep.
And am I forgetting any?
I think that's the big players.
I think that's the major players. Here's what we don't know. Was Crimson Dawn already a thing before the Shadow Collective happened? Or did it, like, is that what the Shadow Collective ended up becoming once everything kind of fell apart in the Clone Wars and Darth Maul and Kira took over Crimson Dawn? Like, we don't really know that whole backstory with Crimson Dawn, but there is evidence that it was already a thing because Dryden Vos is in the Clone Wars and, like, a hologram in the meeting of the minds of the Shadow Collective.
Yeah.
So it's my understanding that what if, now this is the what if part, okay? What if, because we know Kira's in charge of Crimson Dawn at this point because of the comics, and they've already mm-hmm. shown from this past episode that they're willing to reference the comics with Black Chrysanthemum.
Yep. BK.
Yeah, BK is a lot easier.
I will never try to pronounce that.
Santon.
Santa, yeah.
Yeah. What if Kira is the one in charge, and it's almost like the Shadow Collective is still kind of a loose organization at this point.
Yeah.
And Kira's sitting at the top, and she's yeah. like the criminal underworld mastermind.
I love that, and I've kind of had a feeling that's where we were going. I mean, there's just with the context of bringing Kira back in the comic where Boba Fett is featured prominently.
Right.
And like you said, BK showing up here, I think is a direct, you know, kind of shout out to that same comic and everything.
Yeah.
The mayor's office is kind of the Crimson Dawn aesthetic.
It is
kind of the gold and black color scheme a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
It's not similar.
We'll see. I mean, I just think what this show is doing is like in the present day timeline, we'll start to slowly get all the players on the board because they're trying to fight over the control of Tatooine. That's the goal, is control Tatooine, and then it's not necessarily control all the criminal underworld elements like we thought maybe going into the show. Like, it's not like also Coruscant and, you know, all the other planets. It's just Tatooine, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and it's up for grabs, so we'll see.
Cool. Well, Clay, thanks so much for calling. I know we rambled a little bit, but hopefully we addressed everything you brought up. So,
all right, let's do the next one.
What's up, y'all? This is Yosefar from LA. Just calling, thinking a lot about the guys carrying the litter for the huts, and I was wondering if there's a worse job in the galaxy that y'all can think of, because that one looks pretty terrible. All right, thanks. Bye.
That 100% has to be the worst job in the galaxy.
The only thing else I can think of is like cleaning up the battlefield after all of the Naboo mounts were on it. I can't remember what they're called at the moment. Eopies? No.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's from those are on Tatooine, actually. Those are like the camel type things.
Gotcha.
I don't know what the Gungan ones are. I don't know.
What are they called?
I don't know.
Anyway, but yeah, it's got to be a like the dirty jobs of the Star Wars galaxy definitely has an episode on carrying a hut litter.
Go back to watch that episode, and when the huts are there, the two in the middle, like it sags down in the middle, and like the two, like their knees are literally wobbling.
They're like really struggling. I love it.
It's so good.
Yeah, that whole scene was just, it was that larger than life absurdity that this show has delivered on really well so far.
Yeah.
That's just another example of it. Like two twin huts, one with a goatee.
A tattoo goatee. Using a mouse, like a gerbil to wipe its sweat off.
And then they employ what looks like Rob Liefeld's take on Chewbacca.
Hey, that reminds me, no Dash Rendar yet.
Not yet. BK has big 90s EU energy, though.
Well, I mean, like, he's basically the realization, like, in Shadows of the Empire, where Dash Rendar is in, like, that's the whole thing that brought him in. Chewbacca had to dress up like a bounty hunter. Uh-huh. That's pretty much what he looked like.
Yeah. Except he had like a flat headband top. And stuff.
Yeah. He had like a flat top mullet.
Yeah. The 90s were such a magical time.
Oh, they really were. All right, let's do the next voicemail.
Hey, guys, what's up? It's Brandon from New Jersey. Big fan of the pod. Just wanted to give a shout out and say this episode was great. I wanted to discuss one particular point. When Boba is talking about, like, you know, potentially going to war with the Twins and having to get permission to kill the Hutts. I saw a bunch of stuff online that was basically saying that, you know, he'd have to get permission from the Republic because there's some sort of a treaty with the Hutts and so on. But I actually think it's a bit different. I think he has to get permission from the Pikes, given, like, the, you know, after the Tuscans and Boba captured the train, and then he offered them, like, free passage through the dunes. I feel like Boba's going to become, like, kind of a partner or a, like, Tatooine leader counterpart to the Pike Syndicate. And he'll actually be sort of reporting to, like, one of their leaders, but in doing so, like, helping to free the Tuscans and, you know, kind of liberate them from their bonds in a very, like, Paul Atreides Dune-esque style. So, yeah, let me know what you think. Thanks a lot. Great pod. Looking forward to this episode's recap. Have a good one.
Cool, cool. Thanks so much for your call, Brandon. Yeah, I love the different possible takes on kind of what we were just talking about a minute ago. I love that, like, the idea that he would have to get permission from the Republic is a very interesting concept.
Yeah, I hadn't
concept.
Seen that one.
I guess, like, you know, kind of, like, because the Empire, like, them leaving created such a power vacuum with the crime syndicates. Also, yeah. They were, like, in ways the Empire controlled them more, but then, like, in ways controlled them less as well. So I guess just, like, I could see the Republic getting involved with that kind of thing to try to, like, regulate some of that instability, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I feel like they would be more, like, they're more on the surface, like, altruistic and everything, though.
Oh, for sure.
So, like, I feel like they would want to eradicate crime more than, like,
yeah, it's just like it. How realistic is it in their position and, like, how much power they have? Because obviously, even though they beat the Empire, I wouldn't say the New Republic is as strong as the Empire in
no.
my mind.
Yeah. They're not. I mean, that's the whole reason why the First Order becomes a problem later, and, you know.
Right.
I mean, the Empire is still hanging out in all these different
right.
little corners of the galaxy, so.
Ooh, that kind of, like, sparks something. Do you think the Empire will get involved at all, what's going on Tatooine?
That's an interesting thought. I almost maybe think the Stormtrooper we saw in the Sarlacc is going to be the only Stormtrooper we see in the series.
Okay.
I think that would be cool, in my opinion. Because, like, this would be the time when you would see the
right.
least Stormtroopers on Tatooine, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
So, like, I like the idea of just focusing on the underworld. And maybe I would like to see the Republic kind of play the role that the Empire plays a lot of the time, because our protagonists are criminals,
right.
you know? Because they'd be running from the Republic just as much as they would the Empire.
Yeah, I kind of feel like the New Republic is just going to be like, you know what, Tatooine, fend for yourself.
Y'all figure that out.
Yeah, yeah. We don't want to get involved. Yeah. You know, like, I can't see, and maybe Carson Teva of the New Republic shows up and is like,
yeah.
Hey, you guys need to, nope, never mind. I'm going to get back in my X-Wing and
Bye.
Just fly away. We'll see. Now, someone that we've seen on Tatooine before, but we haven't seen yet, is Pelly Motto.
Yeah.
You think she'll show up at all in the show?
Just I would love
if
her
we're
to.
Talking about, like, who could show up now.
Yeah, I love Pelly. I could see her showing up. I could see if Boba ever needs something fixed, or if he needs something technological, you know, he needs to acquire some new equipment or something in that realm. I could see her showing up in that regard.
Yeah.
I don't know, though. I don't know.
Well, let's do the next voicemail.
All right, sounds good.
Hey, guys. This is Zach from Milwaukee. I just wanted to call in with some quick thoughts about Chapter 2 after listening to your breakdown. One thing that I'll start off by saying is that something that I've really enjoyed about this show so far is what we're learning about the history of Tatooine and the relationship between the different groups, and how that's, you know, influencing Boba Fett's goals and ambitions now in the present timeline. With that being said, in your Chapter 2 breakdown, you mentioned that a possible ambition of Boba Fett's is to reintegrate Tuskens into Tatooine society that after being hidden for so long. And I think that that's a very realistic ambition, given what we know about Boba's history and his time with them. And I think that something that the mayor said in this chapter too kind of plays into that, that when you think about it, it might make a little bit of sense. He says, obviously, running a family is more complicated than bounty hunting. And I think that that kind of goes as a warning to Boba that if that is his ultimate ambition in his role right now, it's to reintegrate Tuskens into the society of Tatooine, that getting these Tusken tribes to communicate and interact and respect one another and coordinate all of that, that's a lot more complicated than simply being a bounty hunter. So I think that there's definitely a theory there and a conversation to be had there. And it almost makes you wonder that if that's the case, has Boba maybe got into something he can't handle, that he can't handle, or he's maybe gotten in over his head. So I'd just love to hear your thoughts about that. And obviously, with all that being said, I really appreciate what you guys do. I love the show. It adds so much value to my experience watching the Book of Boba Fett. So thank you guys, and I look forward to hearing what your thoughts are.
Zach, thank you so much for your voicemail and your nice comments. That honestly, stuff like that really, it kind of helps. I mean, like, it helps me and like helps Mac, I know. And so thank you for your nice comments.
In terms
of what's going on with Boba and the Tuskens, I think you're on to something in terms of he is learning a lot from his time with the Tuskens, and Mac, you kind of mentioned this earlier, whether that's like an analogy of what he will be doing in the present time or is doing in the present time, or it's like literal, like he will take those lessons and apply them. We'll see. Now, I want to say, like, and shout out to Star Wars Explained for this video, because they did a really good job with this, and Joseph Scrimshaw from the Force Center was on this video, and it's called Why the Tusken Raiders Are So Important. So go look that up on YouTube. It's really good. It's just like an 8-minute video, but basically they break down, here's why it's important. And this is not something I saw at all in the show, and like it kind of opened my eyes to the Tuskens. But basically, you have three representatives in that Tusken tribe that are kind of like an analogy to Boba's life. You've got the Tusken kid, which represents his childhood, Boba's childhood and how he was like as a child. You have the warrior, who kind of represents who we all knew Boba to be from the original movies. Like, he is the warrior, he is the bounty hunter, and that's something that really came up in Chapter 2 a lot. Like, everyone kept calling him the bounty hunter and not giving him the respect as a leader. And then you have the leader, you have the chieftain, who leads by example and not necessarily is the one doing all the fighting all the time, but kind of leading the entire tribe of Tuskens. And it's like he has been the kid. He's been the Tusken kid. He is currently still kind of the warrior, but what he wants to be is that Tusken chieftain. He wants to be that for all of Tatooine. And I just thought that was a really good take. And I think that's kind of, it kind of opened my eyes and made me appreciate these flashbacks even more.
Yeah, that's I definitely haven't thought of that, but that's a really cool perspective. And I'm having that in mind, I think will probably color my watches of the next episodes,
right.
You know, coming down the pike. You know, talking about kind of like Boba being maybe in over his head with the running the the syndicate thing. Oh, sorry, podcast. Video element. Alex got me way off track.
The syndicate. So Boba's running the syndicate thing.
Alex.
I'm so sorry.
You derailed that train of thought harder than the Pike train got. Not derailed, but anyway. So, yes, Boba being a little in over his head. What, like, if he is trying to accomplish a specific goal, like with the Tuskens, or, you know, like you're trying to help them out in some way, or right or wrong, or something like that, if there's a specific thing he's after, what if, like, the reason Finnick is there is because he intends to just turn it all over to Finnick once he's done?
I don't know what to think of Finnick, because, like, she's not in the show as much as I thought she would be, obviously because of all the flashbacks.
Right.
And think of the name, Finnick. Right?
Like a fox. So crafty, she's crafty, sly.
Right? Can we trust her?
Finicky as well. Is that what you're getting at?
Well, I mean, I was going more of the fox element, like the sly, like, kind of sneaky a little bit. Now, that could be really good for Boba, but, like, I would like to know, really, why is Finnick there? Like, why is she, like, I know maybe she feels something towards Boba for saving her, but, like, this goes back to, why was she there in the first place?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's more information on that coming down the pipe, I think. I think we'll just have to wait and see what develops.
Yeah.
But I'm more excited than ever to see how this goes after that chapter.
Absolutely. Well, if you enjoyed this episode, you can get more by signing up for the Patreon for just $2 a month. That's patreon.com/TheMandalorianWatch. And we're going to continue this conversation over on the Patreon. Our last Patreon voicemail hotline episode was wild. So I'm excited to see where this one goes.
It's always... The longer we spend on mic, the more danger there is of just...
Yep,
exactly. That's all you need to know. If you're interested in finding out why Alex just played a slide whistle, go subscribe to the Patreon, and we'll see you in the next voicemail episode. But until then, keep the watch.